One, two, three, four, just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day, yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. Hell, yeah, what else can I say?
Yo, welcome back to the program. Dave, welcome back from New York.
Yeah, what's up?
This is the Degenerate Podcast. With me, as always, is Robert Timothy on the soundboard.
That was a pre-woo. Woo!
And the aforementioned Dave Callens.
Too many woos out of you, Bobby. You got to settle down.
Today, we're going to do a very special two-part episode. Let me tell you why. Today, as we've talked about on previous episodes, is the San Diego March for Science.
Yeah, buddy. I think they actually took the word march out because that was one of their big contentions in their multiple meetings where they didn't figure anything else out. And I think it's just, I literally think I went to their page and they changed it because they had a huge discussion about how they wanted to be.
So it's just called the For Science?
Yes, it's actually called the San Diego For Science right now, according to their Facebook page.
Oh my God.
Keep this in mind when you're mocking them later, by the way.
Yeah, so just to catch everyone up, Bobby has twice tried to be part of this event. I'm just going to give you a brief rundown. The very first year, the March for Science was a great thing, had 15,000 attendees.
Yep.
Bobby had no part of it,
yep.
But he went and he saw the lacking of talent in the MC department.
Right.
Bobby, you said it's exactly what you'd think it would look like if nerds tried to do some sort of stand-up, like they just read things off index cards.
If they were trying to do any kind of production and you haven't done production before, you don't know how to put together a stage, how to get a good sound system, how to have a central area where everybody gets together.
Right.
And the first one was great. They had a huge turnout. It was right after Trump got elected. Everybody's like, we better make sure everybody knows about science.
Yeah, so Bobby approaches the brass over there. And for some reason, we think, and I listened to a previous episode, We think it's because there was a guy on the board that you've butted heads with before.
Yeah. That's my only contention, at least the first year that I tried to, and they're like, sorry, you can't be on the board. I think it was a few people who I have been on other boards with who are like, fuck that. That's the guy who's always cracking jokes when I'm trying to be way too serious.
Okay. All right. So we think it's that. I think it's because you can come off it as a condescending dick sometimes.
Probably,
but, you know,
that as well.
Oh, yeah. But a little
I think it's because you're bad at science.
How dare you, Dave?
He's fine with him having a personality disorder, but don't fucking tell him he's bad at science.
You are just a grave robber.
How dare you?
So then there was a changing of the guard at the top brass.
Uh-huh.
Whole new board. Bobby went back to them. And by the way, the second year, what was it, 300 people?
Yeah, it's somewhere between when I was there, 300 to 400 of maybe 500 people. So probably
down from 15,000.
Probably the worst slide I've ever seen in terms of an event, which, by the way, has national promotions, funding, and support. This is a national event. They're just the local chapter.
So anyways, so Bobby comes to them and says, look, you failed, all right? There's new people on the board. You failed. Your marketing shit. Why doesn't people like me?
Your marketing shit. Your haircut's questionable.
You're a bunch of losers.
Your kid's ugly. And so, let me on this board.
Give me your lunch.
So anyways, he asked to be on a second time, and for the second time in a row, got a resounding no.
Well, just to detail that, they actually let me on.
They did, and then they changed their mind once they realized.
It. Yeah. They let me on, and they let me go to the first meeting where I like started going like, wait, you guys don't have a venue, you don't have any events, you don't have anything.
Get out of here!
I was like, all right, let me set this up for you and put together quite a detailed plan, a marketing plan, what to do with event-wise, where to go, putting some venues together. And then I got a call halfway through and was like, hey, stay the fuck away. We can't have you anywhere.
How dare you try to make this successful?
Dave, you son of a bitch.
I have a feeling he's leaving out the part where he exposed himself during the meeting. But anyways, because that is the only type of rational reaction for what they gave Bobby, is if he had just dropped trowel and went, what do you think of this?
No, their quote was when they looked at my stand-up online, they said, sometimes when we look in somebody's past and their social media, somebody might be offended. But this time when we looked at it, everyone was offended, pause, and angry.
Right.
Now, isn't this why you go by a different name?
It is. This is why I have to have a comedian name and a science name, because otherwise people...
Then how did this happen?
How'd they find you?
I gave them the comedian name. I promoted myself as a science comedian for the event.
So this is your fault.
So what we're going to need...
Wait a second. He fucked himself, Ryan. Why are we even doing this?
You're going to need a science name, a comedian name, and a science comedian name just for when instances like this. So anyways, we are going over there, and we are going to troll the shit out of these people.
I feel like we have so much to mock them for that we need to, like, separate. Like, okay, yeah. Bobby, you take care of these categories. Ryan, you take care. They're just too much.
I also want to get a famous picture now that we've talked about the differing names where I push one of them down, stand over them like that famous Ali photo, and you go, what's my name?
All right, so we're going to do that later. But first, we're going to do a little regular episode here. We have a listener topic to address right at the top of the show. Josie in Mesquite, Texas wants us to talk about insecure boyfriends.
Oh, that's actually a good topic.
Now, here's the thing. Let me just say this about the insecure boyfriend is when you see an insecure boyfriend out there in public, that is a guy who's sticking his chest out at people, you know, always thinks everyone in the room is trying to steal his girlfriend from him, that guy.
Or he could be the guy that every time his girlfriend comes home from the club, he's looking for, oh, is your makeup smeared? Yeah. I texted you 50,000 times while you were there.
Is the guy's penis in your purse? Yeah. Am I going to find that if I go through there?
He doesn't have to be the puffed out chest guy. He can just be I'm insecure and I'm going to whine every time you come home from a night with your ladies.
Yeah. The guy takes many forms.
Yeah.
Now, we always assume the onus is completely on the guy, and that's fair.
Right.
That's fair because 75% of the time where you see some dude that's like, why are you talking to that barista for so long?
Yeah.
Huh? What are you trying to fuck him?
How does he know your name?
What does room for cream mean, whore? So 75% of the time, the guy came into the relationship like that. I will say that. But I'd say 25% of the time, that dude is created.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you that twice that's happened to me where it's like I came into the relationship and fine and confident, mm-hmm. but for one reason or other, and there was differing reasons, is the woman's damaged and she wants you to make you feel as insecure as she does. So then suddenly it's like, yeah, I was talking to this guy at work. He's, you know, taller than you and better looking and higher belt in jiu-jitsu. And
he fucks better.
Yeah, right. And so before you know it, then you become this guy like, God damn it,
yeah.
Who are you talking to? I'll kill him. So that dude is sometimes made, okay?
Yeah.
Now, what I like doing is when I see the insecure boyfriend, I like to try and determine Which one's which?
So you have a set of diagnostic criteria to try and separate the already came into the relationship crazy
absolutely.
To I was made crazy?
Absolutely. Okay. I like playing this game. Now I'll give you two scenarios,
okay. And
this is how you determine it. Scenario number one, I went to a restaurant, a steakhouse I go to meet a friend for dinner.
Black
he wasn't
Angus.
There yet. Oh, I wish. Let me tell you something about Black Angus. You can get two appetizers and a drink for under $20. Anyway, no, I was at the steakhouse, and my table wasn't ready. My friend wasn't there, so I went to sit in the bar waiting for my table, right? And there's this just chatty, flirty girl at the bar, and she is leaning in, talking too close. She's touchy on my arm and shit. Now, I don't want any part of this. I'm just here to have dinner with my friend. I'm sure that she's out cruising for dick the way she is, you know, approaching me.
Sure.
You know, unsolicited conversation, touching, talking too close, all that.
And as far as you can tell, at this point, she's there by herself.
She's there by herself. Okay. And as this is happening, I feel a hard slap on my shoulder. Like someone has put their hand on me. I'm like, oh, good, my friend's here. I turn around to see a gentleman shooting daggers who I do not know. And this gentleman goes, what's up, bro? How you doing? And she goes, this is my husband.
Oh, God.
Now, it's one thing if the husband's cool and not insecure. Fine,
yeah.
Talk to whoever you want to. But if you know your insecure husband is on the premises, please do not involve me in this bullshit, because now this guy clearly wants to fight me.
But of course, that's the reason she's
right.
Doing.
You're simply a prop in her little game.
100%.
Exactly. Now, that is a guy.
That is somebody who's seeking value by seeing the reaction that other people have to
right.
her. So, like, I want to make my husband jealous. That makes me feel loved. And you are a tool by which she can seek that jealousy.
Exactly. Now, that is a guy who is probably made into this dude that felt comfortable enough aggressively putting hands on me, which is a act of aggression, man.
Sure.
Now, he did it under the coward guise of, hey, just saying what's up.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, not enough to solicit a punch.
Yeah, well, it could be that he was made that way. It also could be that just like a beautiful love story, these two found each other, the super jealous guy.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Sometimes the chick, she'll find a guy like that because that's already the dynamic.
Okay. Yeah, that's another good point. Okay. Now, the other side of that coin, different story. in college, I had an upstairs neighbor.
Oh, wait a second. Did you fight the guy? Did you get the chick? What happened here? Come on.
He puts his hand on Ryan's shoulder. Ryan looks up, realizes what's going on, just reaches out, puts a hand on his wife's boob. How about now?
You watch this.
Right hand red.
I had to pretty much, because I don't want to fight this guy, all right? Because
it's pointless. Why? You're just feeding into this person's weird ego trip if you do it.
Right. Yeah. Even if this guy is 5'8 and, you know, and wildly out of shape, if we get into a fist fight in my favorite restaurant,
yeah,
everybody loses. But when they break it up and he goes, he was being creepy to my wife, who really loses?
Right.
Also, if he's that small, he's the guy who you're going to beat the shit out of me. He's like, he's going to act like he's still got the upper hand. You know, that guy who's
right,
like.
Right. So anyway,
almost had you, bro.
So I just had to count the seconds until my friend got there, and like, oh my god, our table's—it's not ready yet. But we'll wait outside. So the other scenario is in college. I had an upstairs neighbor, attractive girl, but like she came down and asked to borrow my vacuum at some point. Week goes by. I had company coming over. I had to go up to get it back. Knock on the door. Boyfriend answers. I'm like, hey, how's it going, man? Hey, I lent Lauren my vacuum. Actually, there it is right there, like a week ago. You think I can get that back real quick? This guy fucking eyes bug out of his head. Like, how do you know Lauren? We just covered this. I live downstairs, and that's my vacuum. Like, oh, yeah? Yeah, you just let her your vacuum then? Like it's a clear sign we fucked. Because a neighbor lending someone an appliance, that is a clear sign we've been hit.
100%.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah, if you are borrowing somebody's small-scale appliance that's portable, by the way, then obviously your penis has been inside one of
Well, you
holes.
Definitely get a blowjob for the favor.
Yeah, of course. That's, absolutely.
This guy acted like I said, oh, yeah, those are my underpants in the corner. Can I get them back?
Yeah.
No, this guy, he gave me the third degree. And later I hear him shouting at her, like, what the fuck is that? What does vacuum mean? So you Hoover him, bitch? So anyways, so that is a guy who comes into the relationship.
Yes,
like
absolutely.
100%. So that's the little math I like to do when I see the insecure boyfriend. But either way, fellas, whether you were made to feel like this by someone in your toxic relationship or you came into it, there's no better way to make your girl fuck another guy than being that insecure.
100%. Oh, yeah.
There's no better way to make that happen.
And there's no way to take your power back, so to speak, if you have the first type of girl that we talked about. There's no better way to take your power back than to not care.
Yeah.
So, like, if you really don't want her to bang somebody, don't care. Because she's going to do it or she's not going to. But the only thing that's going to drive her to do it is knowing it'll get a rise out of you.
Right. And the thing is, you might be thinking like, oh, the first scenario, well that's what she wants. That's not going to drive her away if I'm giving her what she wants by being this insecure and protective. No, because it's like a drug. She needs more. So
100%.
The reaction that she used to get from seeing you go, hey, why is that guy looking at you? I'll kill him. It's like, oh, what would he do if I actually fucked the guy?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Wringing the hands together.
Yeah, it's
like
you're
a
right.
Dysfunctional game of chicken.
Yeah, right.
No, but you're right with the drug analogy because people are like, well, if we just give her what she wants, it won't be a problem. It's like, that's like saying if we just give the heroin addict heroin, he'll stop using heroin.
Right. Or he'll be satiated with that small dose.
Right. Fuck fentanyl. He won't need any of that stuff.
Yeah, right, right. All right. Another topic here. This actually, Bobby, my wife wanted me to pose this one to you.
Oh, interesting.
There is a term going around right now called California sober. Are you familiar with this?
No.
I have never heard that term.
California sober.
Is this a Katy Perry song?
That bitch is far from sober. California sober refers to when you don't drink, you don't use cocaine or anything like that.
Oh, but you smoke weed.
Well, you smoke weed and use psychedelics.
So I'm California sober.
Yeah, I guess
absolutely you
would be.
Yeah.
But why does that even need to be a term? Like,
yeah, that's ridiculous.
This thing where people, I've seen this so much, people still want the kudos of I gave this one thing up.
Right.
Hey, 5 years going on Facebook. 5 years, everyone, since I've had alcohol. Yeah, but you smoke weed and do cocaine.
Yeah.
No,
because you said cocaine doesn't count.
Well, I know, but the different people have different things. Like, for instance, I know some people that used to do heroin, and of course that's awful. Now they're like, hey man, yeah, sober. Been sober about a year now. Been clean and sober about a year. I still drink and smoke weed. But that is
a huge upgrade, right?
It's an upgrade, but you don't get the kudos you're seeking.
I don't know. I feel like you give that person kudos. I think the second you put
down
the heroin,
if California sober is a thing, then I am beer sober because I only drink whiskey. And
true.
A little bit of psychedelics. I don't drink beer. So
Why does everyone need a goddamn title?
Exactly.
It's
ridiculous.
Here is my one caveat.
You're either clean and sober or you're not.
Well, here's why I think that might be a thing. People with drug problems, like I've got a coke addiction or I've got an alcohol problem or something, usually they can have things like psychedelics without it impairing their sobriety, right? So, in fact, sometimes it even helps their sobriety. There's ibogaine treatments and stuff for people who have certain addiction problems. So, like, if somebody's saying, I have a drug problem with heroin or I have a problem with booze, but yeah, I can do some LSD or some mushrooms out in the woods twice a year, or, you know, I smoke a little bit of weed. A lot of times those people who have those problems can still use those substances without having a problem. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't plenty of people with fucking severe weed problems, and I know plenty of them. Yeah. So that exists too. But I just think it's a different person, right? Like, the person who has a horrible heroin addiction or a horrible alcohol problem can sometimes get away with smoking weed every once in a while without having a problem, and they kind of consider themselves sober.
So angel dust usage is not an issue.
Yeah,
that's completely fine. They handle that.
Want to get wet, Dave?
Yeah, so...
No, Ryan, I'm with you, dude. That's ridiculous.
I just don't know why everyone needs to fucking have a
title. You know what that is? Holy shit. That's the participation trophy
of being
sober. Sobriety. Yes.
They still have some fun. I don't know. I see the value in it. I see the value of somebody being like, booze is bad, man. So if I take 3 drinks of that beer, I will be at a truck stop in Dallas by the morning.
Yeah.
But I can smoke a bong load tonight and go to sleep and everybody's fine, right?
All right. Well, that's fine. That's fine. But why must we fucking demand that we be given this title of sober?
Because I think they're trying to tell everybody, just so you know, if you see me smoking a J, it doesn't mean you can hand me a beer. That's going to be a fucking problem for
me. Okay. Okay. There's value in that. I understand.
That's weird. Interesting, because this just happened. A friend of ours, I don't want to say the name on the podcast, but a friend of ours who is in AA, doesn't drink, you know, gave it all up,
Recently
started smoking weed, just recreational a little bit, and it's been good for him. They enjoy it. It's not a problem at all. But another friend of theirs who's also sober found out and started giving him shit. Like, what's up, man? I thought you were sober. What the fuck is this? Like, getting angry at him. And I'm like,
It's weird, right?
That's different. Like, why?
Isn't it a weird thing where the people have different lines? Because one of the things I always thought was weird is you go to an AA meeting and what are people doing? Downing cigarettes and coffee.
Like,
right? Like,
right.
Those are both stimulants. Now, granted, they're milder stimulants than other things, but guess what? They're both stimulants. So you are.
They're also addictions.
Yes.
Try to take their coffee away.
100%.
Yeah. Fuck off.
100%. Yeah. They're both addictions. They're both substances. They're psychoactive. They're altering your mind, but we consider them different for some reason, right? And you could make the argument cigarettes kill more people than any other fucking drug. So, like, it's not necessarily a lethality aspect to it, but we do make a distinction and say some people can have horrible problems with heroin, but their coffee is not going to be the issue.
I feel like if they just drink coffee, that should be called American sober.
Okay, I just drink coffee and occasionally have a little bit of cocaine. I'm 1980s sober. That's what I am. I'm 80s sober.
Starbucks sober. But then other people, we all know people who have severe weed problems, right? Just the fact that we know a bunch of people who, like, they smoke when they wake up and they smoke their entire day away and their lives go fucking to shit because they don't have any motivation.
Yeah, there is this fallacy that, you can't get addicted to weed.
Of course you can.
And there are no weed problems.
Yeah.
You know, it's because, you know, the right wing nut jobs have had all this whole reefer madness thing since the 50s. Like, you smoke weed, you're gonna be a fiend. But there are some people whose lives are in the fucking shitter. I know them personally.
Yeah.
Like a couple comics that I know. Like, I've been trying to book some road dates with them because I find them funny. I want them to go on the road with me. But I'll be like, hey, okay, I need your I'm talking to you on Facebook Messenger. I need your phone number. Fucking 2 days go by, and I know I'm like, dude, what's up? Whoa, you'd be so harsh, man.
Listen, just for this tour, please get 1980s sober.
Yeah.
And then we'll take it from there.
Yeah. Honestly, I need you productive.
Yeah.
Honestly, the biggest problem with weed that I see, it does ruin people's lives, but more than that, as a comic, the biggest downside of smoking too much weed is becoming a weed comic.
Yes.
Oh, my fucking God.
Ew.
Please choose an identity other than, hey, I smoke weed.
Yeah. But, you know, back to your point, though, like, there are some people that, like, have given people, like you mentioned, have given people, like, the guy we were talking about shit, because, like, oh, you smoke weed, and, hey, Ryan, you drink too much. I'm sober. But I've seen their medicine cabinet, Wellbutrin, Xanax, you know, I'm like, you're high as a fucking kite.
Yeah.
Just because it came from your doctor, and you're not using it, quote-unquote, recreationally, you're still altered in some way to help you cope with this goddamn existence we all have to share.
Yeah, the weed thing can get out of hand for a lot of people. My whole gauge about whether or not you have a weed problem is I go, do you ever smoke before noon? Do you ever? And by the way, and also I'll throw in this, how many times before 4 do you smoke a week? Like that.
Yeah.
Either one of those two things, and now I'm going to start assessing whether or not you have a problem. But like, if you're somebody who goes home at night and, you know, smokes some weed before you go to bed, that's probably not a problem.
Smokes a J, as Bobby
smokes
would.
A fatty J.
Honestly, the only thing that I care about when it comes to substances is, does your substance, regardless of what it is, make your life unmanageable.
And now, do you have enough for me?
Yeah, yeah. Because if somebody like all the time, I get nudges like, yo, that fucking guy does a lot of ecstasy, man. I'm like, well, is his life going down the tubes because of it? Or does he just have fun every single weekend now you're fucking, you're thumbing your nose at him?
Yeah, because you could either be somebody who does a lot of ecstasy and meaning they have a severe drug problem and there's an issue there, or you're somebody who does a lot of ecstasy and you're fucking Moby and that's your career.
Right. And me and a good friend of mine, we both drink a lot. When one of us drinks, they almost burn the garage down, and then when one of us drinks, hardly anyone can tell until they smell it on their breath. So
until they Irish goodbye,
right, until I fall asleep behind the wheel.
By the way, Dave, stay the fuck away from my garage.
So no, that's the thing. Like, I don't care what anyone does, whether it be cocaine or alcohol or weed. Is your life now unmanageable because of it?
Yeah.
That's all that we should be focused on.
Yeah, and is it detrimental? Is it beneficial or detrimental? Because I'll tell you this. There have been times where I've smoked too much weed in my life, and thankfully I've taken a step back and been like, all right, I'm going to calm down on that a little bit. But there's also been plenty of times where I've smoked too little weed in my life, because weed, for me, makes me far less of an asshole, not just when I've smoked weed, but for many days thereafter.
Yeah.
If I had stopped smoking weed for 2 weeks, I'm just an asshole.
Ryan, we need to get him a more weed.
Yeah.
Up his dosage.
Right. Maybe they'll have some of the March for Science, man. I'm going to start trying to score from people.
Fuck you guys. I fucking hate you. Fuck you. Sorry, I haven't.
I blew my cover.
I've been sobering out for a little bit, so.
I just watched a documentary on YouTube. It was...
Oh, God, are you going to tell me about the flat earth
now? You know, you can't see the curvature from the plane.
Can't see the curve.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. Just flat earth thing. I was on Netflix, and they have that show, The Flat Earthers. It's like a special about, like... I forget what it's called. You guys know what I'm talking about or no?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so anyways, like it shows a little preview when you hold on it for a second. And so the guy talking about the flat earther, he's like, look, you can just see there's no curve. You know, these scientists, they just try to throw math at you. And I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? Are you shitting me right now?
I have an interview with that guy where I have a giant foam series of addition, subtraction, and multiplication signs that I just beat him with, chucking them at him from far away. Preferably, they'd be shaped and sharpened like throwing stars.
Yeah.
He's throwing math at me!
Oh, speaking of throwing math, before I get into this documentary I saw, I'm redoing my backyard. And I went to Lowe's. Those people are a fucking bunch of clowns at Lowe's, all right? Those guys have no idea what they're fucking doing. I went in there, and by the way, I'm ordering a huge pallet of supplies. We're talking, I'm doing over 6 tons of sand, hundreds of pounds of cement.
Well, stay the fuck away from Lowe's. Get to RCP, bro.
All right, well, I had a huge discount coming to me because they fucked me over royally before, so I had a 20% store discount on my total order, so I went there. Anyways, I need to get paver stones. And I go, and I'm so distracted, and I have my buddy with me who happens to be wasted, and I'm babysitting him.
Fucking California silver, man.
What are you going to do? Get wasted, go look at some pavers?
That was his plan. I didn't realize until we were in the car. I'm like, oh, boy, you're tanked, aren't you? He's like, yep. I'm like, put your seatbelt on, for fuck's sake.
It's Sunday afternoon. We're going to the hardware store. Better stop off at the bar.
Put some Sammy Hagar on the box. We need some tunes. So anyways, so my friend's wasted. I'm in there like trying to get all this shit, and I'm like, I need to talk to your paver stone guy. I need like a guy with experience in it. Like, oh yeah, we'll talk to Josh over here. I'm like, this fucking doughy ass motherfucker comes sauntering up to me. I'm like, hey man, I need my dimensions of the patio I'm building 25 by 25, and he throws a number 25 feet by 25 feet. He throws a number out for these like these 8-inch by 5-inch bricks that I'm ordering. He's like, all right, yeah, about 230 should be good. I'm like, all right, sounds good. I don't even process that information.
Right.
I'm like, write it down. Literally, I'm laying in bed last night sleeping. My eyes shoot open. I go, 200 bricks for that fucking surface area?
Right, you're like,
what the fuck?
These bricks will have to be 2 feet by 2 feet each.
Yeah. I run and get my receipt. I'm looking at, I'm doing the math. I'm like, that won't even cover the border.
Yeah.
I call back.
You're like, man, I got such a great deal.
I know. I was leaving the store. I'm like, I can't believe I'm redoing my whole backyard for fucking $500.
Yeah.
That's way under budget. Literally, 3 a.m. this morning, 230 bricks? What the fuck? So anyways, I had a call this morning to get that fixed. But anyways, back to the documentary I saw.
Are you laying them yourself, by the way?
Yes.
No, the kid from Lowe's is going to help him.
Yeah. He's done just a bang-up job before.
Yeah, I'm going to lend you a line level. It's a bitch of a work. All right, have fun.
Oh, no, I've been using a line level.
Okay.
Yeah, I've already leveled it previously. Anyway, so this documentary I saw, You guys are remember the boy band craze from back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Absolutely.
Like NSYNC, Motown, Backstreet Boys. No, not Motown. O-Town. O-Town. Yeah. You know, you show your O-face. There was a guy behind all of that.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with this guy?
Is it Lou
I know the story.
Lou Pearlman.
Yeah.
They had a documentary of this guy.
But not the Lou Pearlman you're thinking of.
I don't understand that reference at all.
The guy from, like, Sons of Anarchy and stuff.
That's Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman. There you go.
Yeah, so not that Lou Pearlman. Lou Pearlman.
Not Ron Perlman, Lou Pearlman.
All right, right. So Lou Pearlman, he was this, like, short and stocky little guy who, like, made his way up the ladder through scamming.
Yeah.
Okay?
And had horrible contracts where for the first 4.5 years, you're technically an Irish indentured servant and stuff. Like, it was ridiculous.
Right.
Wait, here's what I know. So you can, I'm sure you're going to tell me a lot more. I know this guy because I forget what the first band was.
Yeah, I believe it was Backstreet Boys.
Okay.
Yeah.
From what I remember, I haven't seen this a long time ago, seen him on the news, whatever. He saw this band, saw packed arenas, sold out shows, all this stuff. Oh. And he said, oh shit, I'm going to get in on this.
No,
he just made a band. He's got some guys together.
You're very close. He was in the business of chartering private jets.
Yes.
And the new kids on the block got on.
Yeah.
And he and this fat old guy from New York goes, how the fuck can these kids afford to charter a jet? What are they, millionaire sons? Like, 40 million in record sales just this year. It's the new kids on the block. He's like, I'm in the rock business.
Yeah.
So he went and just like fucking recruited young, good-looking boys.
Yeah, he just manufactured
back
a band.
When you could do that. Like, hey, old stocky Jewish guy here trying to find some young, good-looking boys.
Dude, this is
the 90s were a beautiful time.
Yeah, right.
This is the exact opposite of Will Smith's Pursuit of Happiness, when this poor destitute man is like, what do you do and how do you do it?
Yeah.
Here's this rich old fuck who has more money and knows what to do with it. He's like, what do you do and how do you do it?
Yeah.
I'm going to make that happen.
What do you do and how can I manipulate you into doing it for me?
So he invents the Backstreet Boys and he just makes New Kids on the Block 2, right?
Three and four.
And this is the beauty of it. This is the beauty of it, okay? So when I was a kid, I didn't follow these bands. I was into grunge and punk at the time, but I always saw them. They were competing brands, right?
Right. That's what I thought.
I didn't realize that he had invented both of them and pitted them against each other.
Yeah.
So essentially, he's the first guy in history to make Coke and Pepsi.
Right.
He fucking saw that there was going to be some competition, so he just created the competition himself and said, I own Coke and Pepsi. Fuck it. Make
actually
them
pretty
fight.
Genius.
So that was what his genius is. But like you said, he fucked these guys over so bad, he made himself the sixth member of each band.
Oh, that's
so whatever
great.
They
all contractually?
Made, yeah, so there were six members of each band, so he got a cut of what they got, plus the managerial fee, plus the agent fee, plus it. So remember all those sales? They sat down after a year of selling out arenas, and it was the check-giving ceremony. I want you guys to guess how much each of the NSYNC and Backstreet Boys checks were for. Selling out arenas, sold 20 million records each.
For a year of work.
For a year of work.
First of all, were they large, oversized novelty checks? Because that's how I'm picturing it.
No.
Those cost like 200 extra bucks to print.
It takes
so
out of the profit.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go ahead and say their major names. They got to make so much cash just at signings. Okay,
I'm really getting fucked. All right?
I'm going to go 100K each.
100K each, which is really getting fucked, by the way.
Yeah, totally. I'm acknowledging getting fucked in that price.
All right, if Bobby's saying 100,000, I'm going to go
$1. All right.
I'm going to price is right you.
All right. $10,000.
Fuck
off. They got $10,000 for a year of work. A year.
Oh, my God.
I know
you're arenas. They were, if they had worked at Starbucks full time.
I know you're a superstar who's made multi-millions and has literally millions of screaming young fans and is at the top of the record charts, but congratulations. You get a used Kia.
All right. So he's fucked them. And by the way, that was all under contract, so he got away with that, all right? He got away with that. They finally were able to get out of those contracts, but all that money, you just got to keep it, okay? Then, and this is what I, when Lou Pearlman came on my radar back in like 07, he was being searched for by the Federal Bureau of Investigation because he had swindled a bunch of old people out of their life savings in a Ponzi scheme.
He made an old person boy band. It's called Hurt Backstreet.
Oh, God.
That's Herman. He's the bad boy.
You can tell because his walker's backwards.
He doesn't take his meds when he's supposed to.
He's on a vanity respirator.
He's pulling out too much from his Social Security and then is fiscally responsible.
He sends his grandkids fucking birthday envelopes with nothing in them.
The band is Oh My Back Town.
He's got a severe Ben Gay addiction.
Oh, he fucks everyone in that rest home.
Oh my God.
Oh, there's hit single Liver Spot You in the Bar.
All right, one too far.
All right, we're doing this now, by the way. We're absolutely permitting this whole thing.
All right, so anyways, but I always wondered, like, what is the mentality where you've made more money than God? You live on Disneyland. Like, your house looks like Disneyland.
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
Same thing. Richest guy in the world, but he's still putting in 10-hour days, 6 days a week. What the fuck are you trying to do, bro?
Yeah, you know, so, but this guy's risking everything. At least Bezos, he, like, fine. That's a drive. I respect that. But, and I can also understand having nothing and trying to run the scam so that you can eventually make it to that level. But he's already at that level.
He's at that level.
And what makes a person do that?
Sociopathology. Like, really? They're somebody who, it's a game, you know, they're trying to win the game. And the
it's,
game
in a weird way, it's that same type of addiction as the girl who wants the guy to be jealous. It's like he needs that risk and that, oh my God, I pulled it off. Well, I fucking pulled it off.
Well, and he also, you have to think of what those kind of scams entail. They entail a lack of empathy because you can't look at an old person who's using their, you know, meager savings from the GM plant to live off of for the rest of their life and say, I'm going to take this from them, even though I'm a multimillionaire. You have to kind of be a sociopath to have that in you. Otherwise, you're staring down the barrel of this old person who's now realistically going to die much sooner because they're not going to have the good medical treatment and stuff that their retirement affords them.
Well, you know, I think I saw it a little different way. You're probably right. But, like, I was looking at this guy's lifestyle, and not only did he live in this huge mansion, but he also had a private jet standing by, a chauffeur-driven limousine. He didn't call a service. Mm. He had a driver just that, like, was living on his premises wherever he wanted to go. Somebody would snap his fingers, they'd get in the limo. Now, that takes
I'm going to call you Cato from now on.
That takes a lot of money. I think that's a guy who earned a boatload of money but was addicted to spending two boatloads of money. Does that make sense? I think, like, once you get to that level, you get to a lifestyle where, like, I can't just go back to calling a limousine service when I need to go. I've become accustomed to the power trip of having my limo driver live on site. I can't just go back to chartering a private jet. I need to own that motherfucker.
But if he skimmed the majority of earnings off the Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, I think he also had like 98 Degrees, like some other
band. He had five other bands.
If he skimmed the majority of the earnings from them out their first year, I feel like even if he's spending everything, he's still got millions in the bank. I feel like he doesn't need it to maintain his lifestyle.
You can keep... I don't think so. Like, money spends faster than you can think. You're thinking small. Like, all right, if I have $100 million, I could spend $40 million and I had everything I want. That guy's spending $140 million. Uh-huh. You know,
there's definitely a degree of sociopathology to it, though, because of the people that he's taking the money from.
Yeah.
If it's just a spending addiction, he's just going to make more bands, screw them over, too.
Yeah, why didn't he just do more? Like, that's what's funny, too, is he's already found...
Well, the bubble broke. I mean, so no one was getting bigger than NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. Yeah. You know, no one ever surpassed them in the boy band craze. I mean,
he should have just moved to Korea. Like, boy bands had a huge resurgence in Korea. He should have He makes really offensive racial stereotype boy bands. It's a bunch of white guys, but they're wearing, like, the rice picking Vietnamese hat.
Oh, that's called K-pop, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be the equivalent of, like, the heavy metal equivalent of this, like, a guy who created Metallica and Megadeth, and then they both fired him because he was taking too much money. He's like, I got Exodus. Like, go away. Go home.
How'd that end up, the documentary?
Didn't he go to jail?
He died in prison.
Yes.
Oh, thank God.
He died in prison.
Yes.
Thank God.
But needlessly, because he already had all the money he could ever fucking need and still made moves that would necessitate him dying in prison.
Every once in a while when I hear about those guys who make the prison, I feel like this way about Cosby. I really hope that the guards, like his particular guard, the person who interacts with him the most, rubs it in every once in a while. Like, I hope every once in a while he wakes him up by coming by his cell and going, Mr. Perlman, your jet's ready to leave. Mr. Perlman. So he wakes up in that dreamlike state, like, oh, yeah, back to my life. I'm going to get it. Oh, no, bars.
I knew a prison guard like that.
Really?
Yes.
I hope they do that. I hope they fuck with child molesters. I hope they do that.
Oh, yeah, for
sure.
So
here's what would happen. I used to work in healthcare, and when I was working at a hospital in Hillcrest, we would get jail holds to come in. So we were contracted with the prison. So if one of their prisoners needed to come in, they wouldn't tell them when they were coming in to get their, like, whatever, tooth extracted, tonsils worked, whatever it was. They wouldn't tell them. They just wake up and be like, yo, it's your day to go to the hospital. Yeah. They'd handcuff them to a wheelchair, and two sheriffs would bring them over, and I would check them into their appointment with a doctor, right? So they'd be sitting there in their fucking orange jumpsuit. They'd be chained to a chair.
They roll them in like Hannibal Lecter on a dolly with a mask.
They did, you know, because they were fully restrained in this chair. And this one prison sheriff, he would always come in, and he would do this, and I knew he was fucking with a guy who he had in custody. He'd be like, all right, hey, what's going on, Ryan? Yeah, weekends here, huh? You got any big plans? I'd be like, and I'd see this guy that knew he was just going back to his cell. I'd be like, not really. He'd be like, oh, yeah? I think I'm going to, and he'd be like, look at his face. I'm going to have a barbecue, probably drink a few beers, and then go, I got this big new California King Tempur-Pedic bed. Me and my wife are going to go rack out maybe after a few chicken legs and Bud Lights. You know what I mean?
Freedom's great.
Yeah, and the guy would just be sitting there like, oh.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm like, oh my god. I wonder, but I couldn't. I wasn't allowed to ask what this guy did to be incarcerated. Yeah. So maybe he fucking deserved all that treatment,
right?
Or maybe he was just on his third DUI and this guy was being a dick. No, I never found out.
I hope they did that to Perlman. I hope they fucked with him every day. I hope, because it's especially fucking horrible to steal money from old people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
They have mental and cognitive impairments, so it's like you're fighting a child. That's right. How I think of it. It's like you are fighting a child. You're going against somebody who is not your equal. They're from a different time period. They don't understand what's going on. And they also just kind of assume you're there to help them. Yeah. And so you come in and you take their fucking money that they need to survive. Like, you're shortening their lifespan. You're making their quality of life horrible. You're probably ruining their family life. People are going to pester them. It's embarrassing for them. Like, everything is horrible.
Okay, and by the way, dude, this is an extra layer to it, because some would be like, well, you know, they trusted their money to a scam artist. This isn't just some guy who knocked on their door off the street and was wearing a cheap suit and had a fedora that he laid on their piano and had a really shit-eating smile. This is a guy who created the two biggest bands that their grandchildren all listen to.
Yeah.
And for Christmas, they say, I want Backstreet Boys CDs. Yeah. So they, and this guy can prove he created them. It's a I probably would have given my money to this guy. Yeah.
Honestly, he deserved to die in jail just for making all those shitty bands.
Yes,
that's true, too.
That, too.
All right, now we're going to kind of call it a week, because now the three of us have to leave the studio to go to the San Diego for Science, whatever they're calling it now. All right, so we're gonna go over there, and we'll see you in just a moment. So basically, we were covering your event. We were at the first one, 2017.
Yeah, I was there too.
That was amazing that year. What was it? 15. We heard from.
Yeah, it was 15,000 people that year.
Holy
cow. We actually did like a mini count as people were. We had a relatively scientific way of doing the count. As people walked by, we counted the people across in the street. We counted for like a minute.
Yeah.
We did it three separate times, and then we counted how long it took for everyone to walk by.
Oh, wow. Okay.
15,000.
How'd that go this year?
For me, the definition of success really is like seeing the kids interacting with the expos.
There's about like five or six here?
Okay, we wanted to come down and just cover the event because we had heard that the 2017 was like 15,000 people. And so we wanted to come and see like what was going on, what it's all about. How did this year compare to previous years?
I know in the previous events, they've had like a walkathon or like a walk as well. So I think that usually drew in more people as well.
Okay.
So
didn't have that this year?
Didn't have that this year. So I think that was a big change in just how many numbers there were.
Okay.
We still got a lot of great people who were interested in science, just a different group of people than we've had in the past, I think.
Okay. Now, we're just covering the event itself. There's no judgment going on. I just want to know what you think as this event. Would you consider this a success, or would you consider like I was really hoping for something more, or?
I think they were hoping for more.
Okay.
Because they also wanted to do a... create the long human DNA strand.
Yeah, I saw that on the Facebook page.
The aerial shot. I know we didn't do that because we needed at least 4,001 people for that to happen.
Okay. How many would you guess were here?
Probably a couple hundred from what I was seeing.
Okay. So far short of that goal, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It would have been cool to have,
Tell me about the double helix. We saw that on the website. We were hoping to get a picture of that. We missed that.
So we did because of the turnout. We did have we did make a smaller one than we originally intended.
Okay.
But I actually think it's almost a good warm up almost for the coming years.
your organization, though.
ShareInternational.org.
Perfect. Okay, tell us a little about that.
So Share International was formed as a nonprofit.
Okay.
And it was formed as, it's a worldwide group of volunteers.
Okay.
And they've been touched with the fact that the spiritual hierarchy led by Maitreya, known by in the Buddhist sect, mm-hmm. is returning to the everyday world. His name is known by the Buddhist.
Okay.
And that he's returning, and about 40 enlightened ones to teach. They say that while they can't do it, they can teach us so that we can do what's necessary to save our planet.
Okay. Okay, so that is science-based then.
If you're worried about like the numbers of 15,000 or 1,000 or 500,
yeah.
For me, every one type of thing matters.
And yeah.
It's a good time spent trying to help people be more comfortable with science, get used to science. So yeah.
Tell me more about these 40 enlightened ones.
40 enlightened. What about, so they on our planet, about 63 have overcome. They've entered the spiritual kingdom.
Of course.
And of the 63, 40 are coming to help us.
Okay.
Why 40?
I don't know.
40 because it's going to take that many to form a pool of love to
get of course.
Us, to get us to respond.
Okay.
And to practically solve things.
All right. Okay.
He's going to want to know when this is supposed to happen and where it's supposed to happen.
Okay. When do you expect that to come about?
A star has been born in the sky. It's not a normal star.
All right.
It started in the year 2011.
Okay.
The scientists can't figure it out.
Mm.
Well, our information is it's the technology of light displayed by our spiritual hierarchy.
All right.
Making a star 5 football fields in size.
Okay.
It's showing worldwide saying, we are here, we are here, we are here.
All right. And the San Diego for Science is signed off on this, agrees that that's probably the...
Well, our basic message is to share and to save the planet.
Okay, gotcha.
So we agree on that.
Okay, sure. All right.
You're going to want to know, just because we're doing the science angle, if the star, you're going to have some ask something like, if the star disappeared recently, does that mean it was formed millions of years ago and we're just not seeing it?
That would be true. To your point about the star... do you disagree that would have been created thousands of years ago?
Well, this is a star-like object.
A star-like object. Okay, got it.
It's not a star.
Okay. Sorry, I misunderstood.
What the spiritual hierarchy is demonstrating is the science of light, that they have mastered. They know the science of light. We currently don't know that. They've come to teach us...
The science of light?
The science of light.
Okay, all right.
To make light happen.
Okay.
And they've come to teach us unlimited renewable energy... ways to solve global warming, ways to solve the problems to save our planet when we're willing to listen.
Okay. Okay. I like it.
All right. Hope you enjoyed us trolling the March for Science. We'll see you next week, cruising with the twos. You Hoover him, bitch! Ooh, 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 yeah, time passing by. Oh, motherfucking time is passing by.
Would you consider an event this small to be as successful as one as big as a couple years ago?
Yeah, for me, it's definitely it's different.